All right. Technical delays. Sorry about that. So thought for a minute you'd have to huddle around my laptop, but we'll get going now. So thanks for your patience. Welcome to building, running, and managing workflows on Windows Azure. My name is Juergen Willis. I'm a group program manager for the workflow team that is part of our Azure application platform team. So if you caught keynote and Scott Guthrie's presentation, Scott owns the Azure application platform team, which workflow team is part of. Okay, so agenda for today. I'm going to actually spend most of the talk today talking about patterns and sort of what it means to run Windows Workflow Foundation, the framework capabilities in Azure. I wanted to focus this talk particularly on things you can go do today using the framework in Azure roles. And then we'll have a little bit of a preview at the end of the talk talking about some new things that we're doing that we have termed Windows Azure Workflow, some new service capabilities that we are working on right now. So we'll spend kind of the end of the talk talking about that piece of it. First, wanted to call out a couple of sessions that might be of interest for the audience here. At Tech Ed North America in Orlando, we had a session around the new enhancements we're making in the .NET framework in Visual Studio, in .NET 4.5 and Visual Studio 2012. We unfortunately don't have that session here in Amsterdam this time around, but we've actually done a whole bunch of work just purely in the framework that is, you know, very much in response to customer feedback that we've gotten from .NET 4. A lot of good work there in terms of, you know, support for C# expressions, a lot of designer enhancements, a outline or tree view for workflows, a lot of enhancements around the versioning story, both in terms of addressability of unique versions of workflow definitions, as well as dynamic update capabilities for running instances, as well as a bunch of runtime enhancements, including partial trust support and a bunch of perf work and that sort of thing. So again, not the focus of this talk, and we don't have a session here, but I do have some links here. So when you get the deck, I have links here in terms of overview articles, as well as a recording of the Tech in North America session that we did on 4.5, and would encourage you to take a look at that. The other thing, and so there is a session on this actually tomorrow morning. So the PowerShell team has done some great work just all up in PowerShell 3.0, a whole bunch of kind of nice enhancements there. And they have a session on that tomorrow morning. The reason I bring it up here is they've also done some very interesting work in terms of integrating PowerShell with WF that allows you to create resumable workflows, resumable PowerShell scripts by leveraging workflow. And so you can actually go into PowerShell. There's some new sort of keywords supported in PowerShell that allow you to author a workflow just within a PowerShell script. Behind the scenes, then they translate that into a workflow, and that allows these scripts to be long-running, survive reboot cycles, kind of scale out the script execution across a farm and that sort of thing. So there's some interesting work that they did there, and they have a session tomorrow morning. There's a link there also to, they have a couple of nice blog posts that talk about sort of the high-level architecture of that. So those are a couple things that may be of interest to you. Okay, so workflow in Azure. Again, kind of focusing first here just in terms of the framework capabilities on Azure. So this is an interesting talk to try and sort of target for the audience in terms of, you know, what people kind of walk in to the room with as far as sort of existing knowledge that you have. So I'm going to do kind of a quick poll here. How many people are using WF today? Okay, great. Probably 2/3 audience. How many people are using Azure in any form, with or without workflow today? Ah, great. Okay, majority of folks as well. And then how many people are using WF in Azure today? Great, so almost nobody. Maybe nobody. Okay, good. Good. So at least there's by and large sort of a lot of folks who know both workflow and Azure, but maybe not sort of the pieces together. So hopefully this is a useful session for all of you. A little bit of kind of setup and just sort of overview about workflow in Azure. Second half of presentation. We'll make very demo focused, but to kind of set some of that up here. So I have a list here of some workflow scenarios that we see today customers and partners are doing in Azure. A lot of these, you know, probably resonate in terms of just sort of common workflow usage scenarios as well, which is not surprising, but these are actually things that people are doing today with workflow in Azure. So, you know, standard scenarios around collaboration and content management, business process management, ERP, CRM, order management and provisioning scenarios. There's some interesting law enforcement scenarios that are being implemented on Azure. Azure deployments. So we actually have a number of both customers as well as internal teams that are actually using workflow to manage their Azure deployments. In terms of, you know, the deploying of their artifacts to Azure, spinning up of roles, managing of role instances, configuring of their SQL, Azure databases, et cetera. And so they're actually kind of using workflow as sort of a infrastructure management capabilities, if you will, for their Azure deployments, which is interesting. And then data aggregation and enrichment, reaching out to different data sources, aggregating the data, cleansing the data, et cetera, are some other scenarios. One particular kind of deep dive on a customer, iCertus, I believe they also have a booth here. iCertus is a customer that we've worked pretty closely with in terms of their Azure usage and workflow in Azure. So they provide a number of different solutions, transportation management, partner management, contract lifecycle management. And in the contract lifecycle management, they're using workflow in Azure to govern the contract lifecycle process. And so I have an example here of a irrigation manufacturer, and workflow drives sort of the relationship and the process associated with the dealer network for this company, working with the manufacturer to close deals and sort of manage the contract process and the order management process. In terms of what their solution looks like in Azure, so they have WCF workflow services running in worker roles. Actually, a little bit later in the talk, I'll sort of explain why they're running in worker roles and following this architecture. But they have workflow services running in worker roles. They actually externalize the workflow definitions and store those in SQL Azure. I'll keep tripping myself up and saying SQL Azure as opposed to SQL database. They store those in SQL Azure. They have some metadata that they put on top of the workflow definitions, allows them to kind of query for the right definitions and that sort of thing. Instances are also persisted in SQL Azure. Then they also use a rehosted designer scenario. So how many people here rehost our workflow designer? Okay, so a handful of folks. So that is sort of one of our scenarios that we see quite a bit with customers in terms of authoring workflows, particularly ISVs, who will leverage our canvas that we ship in Visual Studio, which is rehostable outside of Visual Studio. In fact, it's sort of the converse. We actually host that designer within Visual Studio for authoring workflows in a VS experience. That workflow canvas can be used outside Visual Studio. We have a lot of customers who sort of embed that in their own application authoring shell, often targeted at non-developers, custom activity library, et cetera, that allow non-developers to participate in the process authoring. That's the case for iCertus as well as part of sort of their long-term view. So the rehosted designer, author the workflow, store those in SQL Azure. Those get dynamically loaded at runtime. Link to a blog post. They recently, if you follow the Windows Azure blog, there's a blog post up there that gives a little bit more detail on this solution. So just want to kind of give an example of what we see with customers today. I'm going to try and as much as possible actually kind of give you some things to sort of walk away with in terms of links to resources that you can follow up on if you want to kind of drill into some specific areas. So I mentioned the pattern in terms of taking a rehosted designer, storing the workflow in blob storage or SQL Azure, and dynamically loading that at runtime. That is a pattern that we see. Generally, that kind of pattern we see a lot with ISVs. I would say running workflows in Azure, that pattern is probably even more prevalent. So there are a couple of links down there at the bottom. So as part of a session that we actually did at Build, There was a demo there that Josh Twist did that does exactly this. It rehosts the designer. In that case, it stores it out in blob storage and then dynamically loads and runs the workflow. So that's that first link. The second link is not really Azure specific, but the second link will give you an example of using a virtual path provider in System Web to dynamically load XAMLX files out of storage for running WCF workflow services. So there may be a couple links that are interesting to you there. Okay, so workflow 4 in Azure. The short story is that basically all the capabilities that you think about today with workflow just work in Azure. There's a couple kind of caveats that we'll go into later, but the things that you would have to do special for running workflows in Azure and really even WCF services for that matter keeps kind of going down. And so it's becoming more and more a story that everything that you might do on-prem with workflow are things that you can very easily sort of move into a cloud environment. A few things to call out here. So if you've done any work in Azure, which a lot of folks haven't done WF in Azure so far, so the SQL Azure does not support one of the capabilities that we were leveraging from SQL Server with the original persistence schema and stored procs that we shipped with workflow. So we had to put an update in .NET 4 platform update 1. So you may have seen on top of .NET 4, there's been a series of what are called platform updates. There's been 3 of those issued now. In platform update 1, which came out, I believe, last spring, is where we actually kind of made that change to the persistence logic so that it could run against SQL Azure. .NET Platform Update 1 is part of the guest OS images today, so there's nothing special you have to do in terms of deploying the Platform Update 1 into the roles. That's already there. Really, the thing of interest to you here is that if you're doing things locally, on your machines, or if you're setting up your SQL Azure script, that you'll want to be using these .NET Platform Update 1 or later bits for doing that. .NET 4 or 5 will be as part of the guest OS images in time. That's not going to happen until 4 or 5 releases. So date is still TBD in terms of when that's in the guest OS images. But that is something that will just become an inherent part of the guest OS images in time. You can actually go install 4 or 5 as part of the startup tasks on roles as well. I wouldn't describe it as trivial, but it's also relatively straightforward. One of our MVPs, Magnus Martinsen, who some of you may know, actually did a nice blog post in terms of what it takes to go install 4 or 5 onto roles if you need some of those 4 or 5 capabilities. Okay. Wanted to also mention we have on our CodePlex site, so wf.codeplex.com, we have a workflow CodePlex site, a number of projects uploaded there. If you've not visited the CodePlex site, there's a lot of sort of good resources there, unit testing, custom activity libraries, et cetera. One of the things that we have up there is an activity pack for some Azure-specific activities for calling out to blob storage, table storage, and the cache service from workflow. So that may be another resource that is useful to you. Okay. So kind of next section of the presentation, I wanted to cover what are some common patterns we see customers doing in Azure today with workflow, and then we'll spend some time trying to kind of drill into some of those patterns as much as time allows, and we got a little bit short on time, but as much as time allows, I want to go through demos of some of those patterns, and again, we'll try where possible to also give you a link where you can actually download the bits. That's always sort of one of the common questions I get when customers, come to these presentations and see demos is people like getting the demo bits. So as much as possible, I'm actually trying to provide a link to some downloadable bits that you can go download and play with and extend later. Before we kind of jump into the Azure patterns, I want to level set a little bit just in terms of the hosting options for workflow. It's maybe old hat for people using WebF today, but it sort of is good level set for the patterns conversation we'll have. So we have really sort of 3 key ways in the framework today that you can run workflows, right? Workflow invoker is a type that we ship that allows you to invoke a workflow. You can think about this as really just sort of a synchronous execution of a workflow and return. Pretty constrained in terms of what you can do there. There's no persistence, there's no bookmarks, so there's no callback or continuation mechanism. It is execute this workflow. Largely what people use Workflow Invoker for, and I'm going to actually show a demo later of Workflow Invoker, but largely what people end up using Workflow Invoker for is unit testing of activities. It's very useful for unit testing of activities, but really in terms of sort of production workflow solutions, the next two options are really typically what people land on. So the workflow application type allows you to still host workflows within your host application process. A lot of ISVs use the workflow application pattern type where it's an integrated part of their application and they want to own the process and that sort of thing. Workflow application gives you persistence of long-running workflows, gives you this interactive or continuation-based mechanism where you can have bookmarks in the workflow and resume the workflow after it's gone idle and is waiting on some external event, gives you tracking, gives you an async execution model. So this is often, again, sort of like a code-level integration with workflow as part of your application running in proc. Workflow service host, this is a reflection of a lot of work we did in WF4 of integrating workflow and WCF that allows you to, first expose workflows as WCF services, so it looks from sort of the outside, just like another WCF service, also make it very easy to consume WCF services from within workflows. On top of what you get with the workflow application, this is going to give you these WCF activities, send and receive activities for interacting with services, gives you activation, so message-based activation of workflow services using the WAS capabilities, gives you configuration support, so your web config support, and it also gives you an out-of-the-box experience for durable timers, so the delay activities. You can wire up workflow application to support timers, but there's a little bit more work you have to go do there yourself. That's really more of an out-of-the-box experience for workflow service hosts. So those are our three sort of standard ways of running workflows in WF4 and 4.5 as well, for that matter. Okay. So workflow service host, just like any service host in WCF, you can self-host that, or you can just rely upon IIS and WAS to actually be the host for workflow service host. On top of the framework capabilities, we ship something called Windows Server App Fabric. Windows Server App Fabric is a set of IIS extensions that includes custom tooling, plugs into IIS management console, also gives you enhanced tracking capabilities. So the framework itself is going to emit tracking events out to ETW. Windows Server App Fabric has a component that will pull those tracking events off of ETW, put those in a SQL store, and then surface that tracking information up into the IIS management console tooling. And then there's also an auto start capability, which basically is making sure that your workflow service host instances are up and alive and able to monitor for any timer events, for example, that may fire. The caveat here is that we don't currently support Windows Server App Fabric in Azure roles. We are in the process of doing some testing for supporting Windows Server App Fabric in the VM roles, but we haven't sort of completed that. So although the framework is fully supported in roles, we don't yet have support for Windows Server App Fabric in roles. But that's something we're working on. So in terms of common patterns, I sort of broke this down around workflow application and WCF workflow services. When I talk about workflow application, again, you can substitute in workflow invoker if that is sufficient for your scenarios, but most scenarios are going to actually sort of fall out as being workflow application-based. Two key scenarios there would be integrating workflow application, the execution of workflows into an ASP app running in a web role. Or having a back-end workflow that is processing messages on, for example, Azure queues or Service Bus and sort of processing messages and long-running workflow execution, maybe an order management process, et cetera. That would be kind of a common pattern for workflow application. WCF workflow services, hosting those that workflow service host within IIS and WebRoll. is certainly going to be very common. A sort of variation of that is hosting that in a web role in IIS, but using the service bus bindings. So WCF workflow services, just like regular WCF services, you can apply a number of different bindings to those. One of the bindings that is available and shipped by the service bus team is a service bus binding. And then lastly, you can self-host workflow service hosts within worker roles as well. So these are sort of a few of the patterns I'll spend a little bit of time talking about. Okay, so let's jump into that. Workflow application. If you've used workflow application, you're familiar with this. The basic sort of programming model for workflow application is I spin up a new workflow application instance by giving a workflow definition, and here activity one. Represents a compile type for that workflow definition. And then I wire up a set of event handlers, right, that kind of will respond to events that the workflow application instance will emit. And those will be things like the workflow has gone idle, the workflow has been aborted, the workflow is completed. So I can plug in my event handler logic to respond to those events from the workflow application instance. I'll call an instance run to execute that workflow, and then if I need to interact with that workflow, so that workflow, you know, may very well go idle. The process of going idle is setting up a bookmark, which is a continuation point within the workflow. I can then call resume bookmark, giving it a bookmark name. Also can pass in some data that should be used by the workflow to continue running past some point. So that's kind of the you know, high-level programming model for workflow application, right? Okay. So with that, let's jump into a demo. I'll have to kind of navigate across machines here a little bit to go through this. Okay. So I have this first demo is a demonstration of using workflow application within a MVC project. And so I have my cloud project here that is hosting the MVC project. I'm actually going to start this demo by just running this locally. So I'll F5, spins up the Azure emulator, and launches this project. Try that again. Okay. First time I've seen this. I'm going to actually, I have pre-deployed this solution out to Azure. So let's actually just go run the Azure version of this. So while this is coming up, I'll describe the sample a little bit. So this uses really just the standard MVC project template that you would get. You're going to see the standard MVC page loaded. And what we've actually done is integrated workflow into the registration process. So you know that in that MVC page, you'll get kind of a default registration button. So in this case, we're backing the registration logic with a workflow that also allows that that registration process to be a long-running process. So I'm going to go ahead and start the registration process here. Log into my mail so I get the registration email. Okay, so I've gotten the registration mail. I get a link here to complete the registration. I click on the link to sort of a standard, you know, kind of registration confirmation process that you see on lots of sites. And I can now log back in to this. And you can see I'm now logged in as that user, right? So let's take a look at what was going on there. So basically, you know, if I look in the project, and I do have a link in that demo slot, I do have a link to this project. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time going through the code itself. But essentially, I have this account controller. The calls on the actions in the account controller are really effectively end up being just redirects to the workflow application. So there's this verification type, which is really just a wrapper in this project over a workflow application. And so verification, for example, call against that MVC controller is going to redirect that to this complete registration method on the workflow application, which is just a bookmark that's set up in the workflow. If we take a look at the workflow itself, this is implemented as a state machine workflow. So I first enter this send mail state within the workflow. If I click into that, I'll get a validate registration data. It goes through and validates some of the input data that I put in. You know, the password is strong enough, etc. Puts together an email message. There's a set of activities that are being used in the workflow here, custom activities that are part of the project, and then it sends out the email. The email then, you know, what are my transitions from that state? I can have a timeout value, so it just has this delay. It'll send me a reminder messages if I don't respond in a certain period of time, and then re-enter this state. Once I've confirmed, it'll enter this final state here, and it'll approve my membership on the site, which is actually just then entering me in as a confirmed user on the site that allows me to then come to the site and log in. So it's a relatively straightforward workflow definition, but obviously you could extend the workflow considerably here in terms of much richer registration process. Again, the workflow is useful here because that registration can be a long-running process for each user. You know, the user may not respond in time. The user may have lost the mail and wants to, the mail to be resent, etc. So this was sort of an example of using workflow application, integrating it into the MVC app. Then this is deployed up in a web role in Azure, and everything is self-contained within the web role. All right, and as I mentioned, there's a link down at the bottom here if you want to go download that sample and take a look at that. Okay, So the next pattern I want to talk about is utilizing workflow invoker. And again, you know, oftentimes you may sort of substitute in workflow application code here as your workflow gets a little bit more complex if it's long running, et cetera. This is a very, very straightforward example that shows workflow invoker that pulls messages off of, in this case, the service bus queue, could also be an Azure queue, and processes that message. So I've actually kind of, you know, pulled out the really relevant code out of the sample just to talk about here. The code looks something like this in my run method. Of the worker, I'm going to use this is an instantiated client using the service bus SDK. So I get a queue client here, and just in a loop, I call receive on that. If in fact there is a message available on that service bus queue, I pull off that message and I call this process received message or method. In this method, which is getting now the brokered message, which is that service bus type representing a message on a queue. I pull out the body of that message, which is a math problem type in this particular scenario. So this scenario is basically just doing a math computation. And then it takes that math problem instance, passes it in a dictionary. So when I invoke workflow invoker or workflow application for that matter, I can pass in a dictionary of properties to it. In this case, I'm just passing in a dictionary with one key value pair, which is problem, as well as this math problem instance. And then I call workflow invoker.invoke, right? So this would be just a common pattern of basically just polling against a queue and then using workflow invoker application to go sort of run the logic associated with that. Again, workflow application being long running, I'd be pulling messages and resuming workflow instances that have been persisted for, you know, some period of hours, days, weeks, et cetera, right? So again, let's jump over here and we'll take a look at that sample. I already got used to working with the new portal, so a little slower navigating in the old one. So this is also a sample that you'll be able to download it. Again, it's a very sort of straightforward sample. I'll just run through it once to show you what the sample does, and you can take a look at it later. How many people here are using Service Bus? Handful of folks, okay. So all the sample does is I put in the problem, you know, I can put in the operator here and my operands, submit that. That is then using the Service Bus client just from this ASP site to publish a message to the Service Bus. That is then getting picked up and dispatched to the workflow. The workflow then posts the response out to another service bus queue, and so I can just poll against that service bus queue to get the response and, in fact, confirm that 1 plus 1 equals 2. Okay, so that's that sample. All right, so those are some samples around kind of workflow application and invoker. Let's jump into the set of patterns associated with WCF workflow services. So for this one, I thought it would actually be useful to do a little bit more of a hello world sample here just to show you, you know, sort of how straightforward it is to get started using WCF workflow services with Azure. So I'm just going to start from scratch here, do a new project. There's one piece of that won't really work since I'm not connected on this laptop. But, you know, I can just do file new workflow service project, just part of the, you know, set of templates that we shipped with .NET 4. If I look at what I get here, if you've used this project type, you know this, is that I just get a default workflow implementation that has a receive and send response pattern sort of pre-populated in the workflow. It is getting the message in. It shoves that message content into a data variable. So I have a variable data defined on this workflow as part of the template. And then send response here. Send response is going to just call toString on that variable, right? So that's kind of the default template just to kind of get you bootstrapped in terms of the process for using those WCF activities that we ship with workflow. Obviously, you would start kind of putting your logic in here between the receive and the send in terms of, you know, what should be done with the data. You might call out to other services, et cetera. So this is kind of the default template. If you use this, you know, I can just F5 this, and it'll launch the test, the WCF test client here for me to invoke that service and test the service. So I can give this some value, which is, again, going to be bound to that data variable within the workflow. I call that, and it responds back with a string version of the data that I passed in, right? So that's just kind of my basic experience for doing that. So now, you know, what if I want to turn this into an Azure project and deploy this into Azure? What would I need to do? It's actually very straightforward to get started doing that. So I can come on in my project, and in, I believe it was the Azure SDK 1.6 is where they added support. You could actually already bring an existing project into an Azure role and kind of attach it to an Azure role. They made that even a little bit easier in the tooling, where if I right-click on this project, I can just add Windows Azure Cloud Service Project, and it's going to add another project into my solution, which is a cloud project, and it's going to basically pre-attach the WCF workflow service project into this role, right? So it really creates that role on my behalf and connects it up to the project I already had in the solution. So it just makes it a little bit easier to sort of move your solutions into the Azure-based deployment model for roles. If I F5 here, I have sort of a couple options I can do right now. So if I F5 right here, it's still going to go ahead and start up the project. But of course, now rather than just running that WCF workflow service in IIS or IIS Express as it would do on a normal project, now it's starting up the Azure emulator. Hopefully, I have more success this time than last time. It'll start up the Azure emulator, and it's now actually running that project within the emulator. So it takes a little bit of time to bootstrap the emulator the first time. It's going to launch this page here. And so I did actually get an error here because it wasn't actually hitting the site. Or the service specifically. So if I append this service 1.xamlx, it's now going to hit the service. I hit my semi-standard WCF page, my WSDL, and that sort of thing. So one thing it doesn't do, and by the way, you can actually go into the solution and set both projects as startup projects, and then it'll actually launch this page directly. So you didn't have to kind of go append the service definition. So that's just kind of a convenience thing if you want to do that. Now in this case, it doesn't actually launch the test client. So I'm just going to manually launch the test client here. I give it the address of the service. And now my behavior using the test client is exactly what I saw before. So we'll just run that to prove the point. Right, and so I get the same expected response there. Okay, so what I would do at this point is go ahead and deploy this up to Azure. Unfortunately, since the network connectivity doesn't seem to be working here now, that's not going to work for me. What I would do here is I would just hit publish on the cloud project. So I can hit publish on the cloud project. It's going to, these are all cache values. So I can go to a particular subscription I want to deploy that to. At this point, it would go to that subscription. It would download all the hosted services that I have running in that subscription. I can either deploy this project into an existing hosted service I have, or it'll create a new one on my behalf. Again, since I'm not connected, it's not giving me that list anymore, but I could just then go deploy that again on top of an existing hosted service, in which case it'll prompt me if I want to override it, or I can it will create a new hosted service on my behalf as part of publishing that. At that point, again, my experience is identical. I can go hit the endpoints of that. I can get the WSDL associated with that. I could hit that with a test client, et cetera. You'll have to take my word on that piece. But it, again, the point of this one is that it's very easy for you to do sort of the standard things you would do with WCF workflow services, get those into cloud projects, get those deployed as part of sort of the CSPAC experience running up in Azure. You used to have to do more sort of custom config work to effectively get workflow services addressable in Azure and reach the MEX endpoint and that sort of thing. A lot of that work has sort of been taken care of for you now, and so it's actually a much more straightforward exercise now than it used to be. Okay, so there are a few considerations that I want to call out here, which are largely relevant specifically to WCF workflow services. So, for those of you working with Azure, you undoubtedly know that there's no distributed transaction controller support in Azure. So this is, you know, there's obviously nothing specific about this to workflow, other than the fact that workflow 4 relied heavily on DTC to get consistency in terms of pulling messages off of queues, sending outbound messages, persisting the workflow instance state to reflect all of that work, and doing all of that as part of a distributed transaction so that you had consistency across the message consumption, outbound message sending, and persistence of the workflow state, right? No DTC in Azure, which means that you can still run these workflows, but you're not getting the distributed transaction controller support. So implications of that are, you know, there are a few things you want to kind of do around sort of mitigations of that. One good sort of best practice is on your send reply. So if you use this pattern, you receive a message and you send a reply. Just in WF4, nothing new here, but in WF4, there's this checkbox where you can say persist before send. And effectively what this is doing is ensuring that you get consistency between the outbound response that you've sent as well as persistence of the workflow, because you want to avoid a scenario where, for example, you send a response to the client. The client thinks all, you know, everything is good, but you get some error in the workflow and it rolls back to some prior state, and the workflow may just now be waiting for the client to send in the message, but the client thinks everything is good, right? So check this box, and now you get some of those guarantees in terms of making sure that the ACK back to the client also means that the workflow is being persisted at that particular state in the workflow, and you maintain that consistency. So that's one good thing to be aware of. Second point here is around persistence. So if you're coding against Azure, you know that it's more important to write your code such that it is, let's say, accommodating of sort of any timeouts or issues or throttles and that sort of thing in SQL Azure. So again, just sort of a best practice in terms of writing apps against SQL Azure. True also for workflow. So you use the SQL workflow instance store service behavior in config now to actually set up your persistence store to standard, you know, WF4 stuff. We added as part of that platform update one this additional element, the max connection retries, that allows you to configure the connection retries. We recommend that you set that to at least 15 if you're targeting SQL Azure. But you know, this is fully customizable in terms of you populating that. So you can just add that into your config. Also, workflow service host running in IIS and web role. So sort of background, there is this lock owners table that I'm showing there. That is one of the tables that is part of the persistence schema for storing workflow instances. And this basically helps to identify, you know, who has a lock on this workflow instance, right? So this is just sort of part of the pattern of workflow 4. I can have multiple different machines that are processing workflow instances, but obviously I only want a given workflow instance loaded into one machine at a time, or else I'm going to, you know, get sort of a lot of kind of bizarre behavior. So this maintains that lock. You know, it can time out, and the lock can automatically be released, et cetera. But this is sort of some runtime support that we provide for you in scaling out your workflow solutions. The trick here in Azure and web roles is that the deployments instance actually becomes part of the host name. And so when we write that out into the lock owner, the challenge here is that if, for example, your VM gets recycled, you may have a change in that host type property, basically, and it means that the VM can no longer reload that workflow instance, right? So there's this special nuance in the web role just in terms of the host name that's getting used within IIS that we persist in the instance store that prevents you from really sort of scaling that out across instances or from reloading that if the VM needs to be recycled. So given kind of this new behavior in web roles, we've made an update in 4.5 that sort of accommodates for this. So once 4.5 is in the guest OS, or again, if you go deploy it yourself, this becomes a non-issue. But this is a challenge right now with the guest OS images. And that's one reason, for example, that when I mentioned before iCertus was actually doing self-hosting in worker role, it was actually specifically around this issue as they were sort of scaling out their infrastructure. So that's one thing to be aware of. You know, if we have this conversation again in a few months, I wouldn't even have to talk about this, but this is something to be aware of right now. And the last point here, sort of the new preview functionality around Windows Azure websites. If you've not taken a look at that, you should. But that's just out in preview form now. So right now, there's the bug that the team is working on that prevents the activation of services within Azure, this Azure websites capability. So deployment of WCF workflow services into websites, you're not going to get sort of the right activation behavior. So really, web role and worker role is sort of your best solution for WCF workflow services right now. That should be fixed by the time the websites comes out of preview mode and goes into GA mode. Okay. All right. So demo here I wanted to show around this mortgage acquisition process. So again, let me just I'll kind of run through the demo first, and then we'll talk a little bit about the code itself. Let me find the right project here. I think I have to go into the preview for this one. Or let me just get the URL for this. What just happened there? All right, so this is a simple demo. The front end, the ASP app, is actually running in the new Azure Websites preview. The workflows themselves, these are WCF workflow services. These are actually deployed still into web roles. If I go into the application here, I can, you know, submit my application, house price, percentage down payments. I put in, I can check some other boxes here around how fiscally responsible I am. And I can submit this for bids, basically, for vendors to give me a mortgage on this house. I can come in here and request an update to the status. So right now, it's sending a request out to our first vendor about getting a mortgage provision for this particular request. I can keep updating. So now, basically, vendor one has responded that they're not going to provide a mortgage. The workflow is going to go out to vendor two, request a mortgage. It's going to go out to vendor three. And so in this case, all three vendors have actually rejected the mortgage. The app itself is just sort of random in terms of which vendor actually provisions the mortgage. So the scenario is more fun when actually a vendor gives me a mortgage. But if you look at the app, it's basically sort of random in terms of when it does that. Let me show you a little bit about the project itself, though. So this is what the workflow looks like in the project. So I have a receive activity here that's getting all that data that I put into the form. Those are all going to be bound into variables in my workflow. It does this initial screening. So, you know, for example, I checked a bunch of stuff. I've had bankruptcies and that sort of thing. It may just reject me out of hand without going out to the vendors. Assuming that I pass the screening, it'll provide this response. And then it makes these calls out to these different vendors. In this particular case, the workflow is just making those calls to vendors in sequential fashion. Obviously, you may change this. You could go out and call the vendors in parallel fashion, look at the competing bids, provide the client with the best bid itself. So that's the workflow definition. In terms of consuming that workflow definition, if you use WCF Workflow Services, this is pretty straightforward. So I would have a service reference. I can add service reference on that workflow service. That's going to give me this service reference. From that, I get a WCF client, right? And then my WCF client, I just call evaluate mortgage, and I'm passing in all of those different parameters that I populated on the page, right? The calling out to the vendors themselves, so each vendor implements a fixed contract. And so, again, you can just do add service reference on that, and that will generate this ask vendor activity, which is that single operation on those vendor services. And so those are the activities that you see populated here, the ones that are auto-gen from an add service reference on the vendor service. All right. Okay, so interest of time, I wasn't planning on doing this anyways, and we're a little bit shorter on time today now. But there is also a sample here that shows using WCF Workflow Services with Service Bus binding. There's a link here. There's a nice kind of write-up as well as downloadable code. So if this is something of interest to you, I'll just refer you to the sample, and you can take a look at that offline. So with that, I kind of want to pause. Those are the patterns I wanted to talk about in terms of just what you can go do today with Workflow 4 and very soon 4.5 in Azure. And then I'm going to jump into, again, kind of a little bit more of a preview of some new things that we're working on that are not yet released, but some new things we're working on, and give you a little bit of a preview for that. Before I do that, any questions around using Workflow Framework within Azure roles today? Right. So where does that workflow instance state get persisted? So with the framework, it's an extensibility point in terms of where that gets persisted. So you can actually plug in your own persistence participant to actually store that workflow wherever you want. We ship as part of the framework a persistence provider that writes it out to SQL. And that, again, kind of with this fixed and platform update, that can be SQL Azure or SQL Server on-prem. And so that basically means whenever a workflow reaches an idle point, it can persist that workflow instance out to SQL. And then if another message comes in, it can load up that workflow. Any node can go reach into that database and load up the workflow instance and resume the workflow at the right point in the workflow, right? And so if, for example, you were using workflow application, you would sort of reload that instance yourself. You would call load to load that instance out of the database. With WCF Workflow Services, we provide some message-based correlation so that a message can be delivered. Our system knows, oh, okay, these message properties tell me that this is affiliated with a particular workflow instance, can reload that and resume the workflow at that point. But effectively, you're externalizing that state away from any particular server that's running workflow into some external store so that any one of those nodes can load it. Does that make sense? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that should be a big takeaway for you is actually, you know, the things you'd be used to doing with workflow on-prem today, you know, by and large, those things are going to all sort of apply to your experience in Azure. And again, some of those sort of hurdles that existed early on, we keep sort of knocking down. So you should very much be able to kind of leverage your existing workflow skills and code and that sort of thing for bringing workflow solutions to Azure. And absolutely, the kind of the model is very much the same. Okay, other questions? Okay. So, Windows Azure Workflow. So this is kind of the term we have applied to some new work that we're doing here. Let me revisit the slide that we looked at earlier that talked about these three hosting options. Think about the workflow we're doing or the work that we're doing right now as really sort of enhancement to that and providing a new option here that allows you to run workflows and sort of treat, you know, workflow as a service that you can address for managing your workflows, running your workflows, managing your workflow artifacts, et cetera. In terms of kind of capabilities and design points for us with Azure Workflow, first is high density and multi-tenancy. So, you know, Azure is sort of the first and foremost kind of focus of these capabilities, although we will talk about the fact that we're making these capabilities available both sort of in Azure as well as on-prem. But one of the key goals here is to, you know, thinking about a scaled out Azure architecture, thinking about ISVs who are, building out their software as a service offerings in Azure and very much having to think about multi-tenant problems. We want to sort of address those multi-tenancy issues, at least from a workflow standpoint, in this service. So that is kind of a key design goal. Elastic scale, so being able to dynamically scale out the system where you as workflow consumers don't have to sort of manage your instance counts and that sort of thing. You basically kind of think in terms of, you know, delivering messages and running workflows, and we can scale out the system on your behalf. Adding some first-class capabilities around managing your activities and workflow artifacts. So kind of a key principle here is that, you know, we look at a lot of these common patterns of what customers are building and say, you know, customers shouldn't have to kind of build all this and kind of, you know, create this infrastructure and sort of plumbing work, focus more in terms of what are the custom activities specific to your domain, the workflows that are part of your business. And so we want to kind of keep lifting up the platform to build out some of these capabilities. So the pattern of having a repository for storing activities and workflows and managing the dependencies among those things and so on, that's a capability that we're working on adding into this solution. Fully declarative authoring. So one of kind of the aspects of the multi-tenancy is being able to kind of run in a sandbox, that does not require code execution. So we've actually kind of pushed the model pretty significantly in terms of what you can author in fully declarative fashion or sort of XAML-based composition of activities for authoring your workflows, as well as a declarative data model for also creating data model types and using that as your programming model within workflows. That's a piece of it as well. Instance management, you know, standard things in terms of thinking about terminating workflow instances, for example, and seeing instance state. Tracking and monitoring is kind of, we'll keep adding more and more of these capabilities into the system. There's a lot of integration that we're doing with Service Bus. An aspect of that is sort of architectural, and that is actually something that is kind of allowing us to get back some of these kind of process and message guarantees without having DTC. So there's an architectural integration between those things. We also want to provide integration from a programming model standpoint. And so we're working on some first-class activities you can use in workflows for publishing to service bus queues or topics, subscribing to a service bus topic, et cetera. So that is sort of part of our roadmap here as well. Managed service reliability. This is just sort of, you know, part of having a Azure service is being able to give you a promise in terms of SLAs and uptime and availability and that sort of thing on the service. You know, obviously that is a non-trivial undertaking, but that is kind of the service environment we want to build out. So again, you don't have to do a lot of that work yourself. And the last key point here is that this is all building on the workflow for programming model. So again, you can very much think about this as sort of continuation of what you do with workflow for today. You know, control flow activities are all the same, et cetera. So think about this as sort of a continuation of that work. So I wanted to, one, give you an example, but this is also going to be set up for a demo that I'll show you in a minute. So the scenario here is I have an ISV that creates a trouble ticketing or help desk application, right? And they're providing this as a SaaS offering out to all of their customers. You know, most organizations have some help desk, but they don't want to, you know, create their own kind of help desk software or install that locally. They're on sort of their journey to using SaaS applications in their enterprise. So this company basically allows onboards other companies to their help desk process. So Fabricam is the help desk company that is standing up this this SaaS offering. Fabricam IT, you know, owns this sort of top-level workflow namespace, for example, and there is a set of activities that they provide there for workflow authoring that are specific to the trouble ticketing domain, so to speak. Contoso then is one of the customers that comes along as a customer of Fabricam. Contoso may have some Contoso-specific activities that are specific to how they manage their tickets through you know, through their organization. Contoso users, you know, very possibly non-developers, are participating in authoring these workflows then using these up-leveled set of help desk activities, which could be Contoso's activities or Fabricam's activities. Okay, so with that, let's jump back here and go into a demo. Fortunately, this demo should require no internet connectivity. also, through the wonder of the new Win8 client, which supports Hyper-V, this is very nice. I can actually be running a VM on my laptop here, which has been great for sort of both these evolving builds and being able to kind of do things locally on my laptop and that sort of thing. So here's my help desk application. This has already been customized for Contoso as a customer of Fabricam. Can log into the application here. I can see a you know, a series of tickets that have been created. This, by the way, like the front end that I'm showing here is an open source application for trouble ticketing. So you can actually, you know, go download the source for the help desk itself, and then I've wired in and kind of integrated in with our workflow service to drive some of that behavior. But I see kind of standard trouble ticketing stuff. I can create work orders, I get logs, I can add comments and that sort of thing. But let's take a look at the solution itself first. Okay. All right, so what I have here is an example of rehosting the workflow designer. So I have this design canvas here. I'm seeing a toolbox that has both the out-of-the-box activities that we ship. A lot of these you'll be familiar with, these control flows. In the service, we're adding new activities around HTTP client activities for calling out to REST services. For example, so I'm seeing those here. And I'm also seeing a set of custom activities that are provisioned here as sort of part of this help desk application. So if I look at this, I'm connected up to my local machine here. This is actually the URL to, I have the service installed locally. So again, I mentioned we're working both in terms of standing up a service in Azure, but also making this available on-prem. So I have the service installed on a VM on this machine, and that's what I'm attached to. We have this notion of scopes in the system. This is a hierarchical concept. You can use scopes any way you want to. But in this case, I'm actually using scopes to kind of manage some of these artifacts. So I have activities provisioned at a certain level. So Fabricam's activities are at this help desk level. You know, Tailspin Travel might be one customer of Fabricam. Contoso is another that we're talking about here. So I have a bunch of activities that have been deployed at this help desk scope level. And there's access control and that kind of thing that you can put around these scopes. One of those activities determine issue type. So I have that sort of file stored locally here. We can go take a look at that. Determine issue type here is just going to look at some values in a ticket, and it's going to assign this issue type of add channel, for example, or issue type is service outage, etc. This provides, again, kind of these up-level set of activities that that a non-developer could go use to compose a workflow. So if we take a look at the workflow itself, it's going to do some basic kind of initialization of the workflow. The task is being sent into the workflow, or the ticket's being sent into the workflow. I use this determine issue type. If the issue type is a service outage, for example, I want to assign that to a network engineer. So, you know, issue types will drive who it gets assigned to. It might drive priorities of the ticket and that sort of thing, right? So that's the sort of high level on the workflow itself. Now, actually, I can actually come in here. One of the capabilities of the service, I can come in here and sort of navigate over the namespace of my service. So I'm hitting my service here on a HTTPS endpoint. I can see that I have this root scope defined. I can come down to help desk here. I see the characteristics of the scope that's defined here. What's kind of more interesting is to navigate to the activities. So those activities you saw in my toolbox, I can see what activities are provisioned against this scope. I could similarly come down here and navigate down to the Contoso scope, look at the workflows that have been deployed against that. I can see this ticket management workflow that I've already published up into the service. Okay, so that's the bits around the workflow. If we look at the project itself, so it's a MVC application is the basic trouble ticketing app. I've added in this class here, this help desk workflow. In this, then, we have this workflow management client. So this is a .NET client. So you could actually hit the service and just the rest set of endpoints on the service for doing these things like uploading activities and workflows and starting workflows and that sort of thing. We also have a .NET client for integrating with the service. So that's what I'm using here to call into so I can manually start a workflow. I could do a message-based activation of the workflow, or I can just manually say start this workflow. I create these start parameters. I'm going to pass in the JSON. So I take a task, which is an instance of this the task type, which represents that help desk ticket. I serialize that to JSON. I add that into my start parameters. And then I just call start on the workflow client, giving it the name of the workflow and passing in the trouble ticket as JSON, right? So that's all the code I have to write to from my MVC app go interact with the service, right? So with that, let's go ahead and I could, you know, the workflow itself I showed is a pretty kind of simple workflow. All it's really doing is on the initial trouble ticketing creation, going and setting some parameters on the ticket. You can imagine kind of more complex workflows where, for example, I need to resume the workflow. If the trouble ticket is put on hold or canceled, I want to send a message into that workflow. I can do that with this workflow notification. I can send a message into that workflow instance, pass in some parameters, say that the status has been put on hold and that sort of thing. So I can certainly kind of build out much richer scenarios. Let's go take a look at the app itself and run through the app. So let's go ahead and create a new trouble ticket here. And we'll say that we have a service outage. It's passing that into the MVC controller that then turns around and calls against the workflow service. The workflow service is analyzing these things and populating additional information on the ticket. If I come down here and look at the new ticket that we've created, I can see that, in fact, it got assigned to a network engineer because it was a service outage. But I notice, for example, that the priority of that is low, which doesn't seem quite right as a service outage for that to be a low priority, right? So I can say, sort of my business owner sort of knows what priorities are associated with different kinds of trouble tickets. If I look at the assign priority here, I can see, in fact, that this has been set to low. I might want to change that and say a service outage actually is a high priority incident. I want to go ahead and publish that out to the service and redeploy that out to the service. And so this is going to, again, just use that .NET client that we have for interacting with the service and republishing that workflow. In a minute, it'll give me a response that that's been uploaded, both kind of the workflow definition, which can have activation parameters on it, as well as the root activity, which is the implementation body of that thing. So now if I come back, and let's go create another ticket here and rerun this. Put my address in here. We're not using this scenario, but certainly you can imagine escalations and that sort of thing, relying on an email activity. If I go submit this, look at my ticket, and I can see now that the priority on this for a service outage is set to high. You notice I didn't restart the app, right? This was all sort of dynamic behavior for the app itself by virtue of deploying new workflow behavior that the app just automatically picks up. Okay? All right. So running short on time here just to wrap up. So what are some things I didn't sort of worry about here? I didn't do some of that infrastructure work of building out my own kind of repository for managing artifacts and workflows. We do work in terms of managing, again, kind of the version dependencies among those things, database setup, configuration management, kind of scaling out. Again, I have an on-prem version installed on this VM here, but from a service standpoint, those would be things that you wouldn't have to worry about. Sandboxing and resource fairness. So part of the model is, for example, Tailspin travel as one customer for this help desk is completely isolated from Contoso from kind of a sandboxing standpoint and a resource utilization standpoint. Those are capabilities of this system. Transactional consistency is sort of, back in the system again, so to speak. Disaster recovery, so kind of those service readiness aspects that are characteristics of the service for failover across data centers. Those are all capabilities that we're building into the service. Okay? So roadmap on this. So this is very much sort of work that's under development right now. We do have a TAP program that we've kicked off, some folks in our TAP program in the room today. We are working on preview releases, public preview releases that you'll be able to get a hold of. While we're both working on kind of a service as well as a installable version, the first thing we'll make available is the user-installed service. So again, you'd be installing a version of the service and hosting that yourself. Obviously, you could do that on-prem or install and run that in Azure roles. So this is kind of work on in progress, but again, I wanted to provide a little bit of visibility to some of what's coming down the road. Okay. So summary, Workflow 4 is up in Azure today. All those capabilities you are using in Workflow 4 today are available to you in Azure. 4.5 is going to bring both some new high customer demand features just from a framework standpoint, as well as that specific issue around web role that there's better support for running in IIS and web roles. Should very much be able to leverage your existing code and knowledge. Workflow Azure Workflow is really kind of a first-class Azure hosting and management capability that we're developing now. And the third point is, we're very much sort of early in terms of building out some of these new workflow capabilities. Would love to hear more in terms of your scenarios, what you're trying to get done with workflow in Azure. Make sure we're making the right investments, sort of understand your scenarios and requirements and that sort of thing. So definitely encourage you to get in touch with us, as you're kind of working through those projects. Let's see. So related content, I mentioned kind of the PowerShell session. I have a link here to the 4.5 recording from Tech Ed North America. Find me later. So I'll be at Ask the Experts tonight. Hopefully you're attending that. Certainly feel free to come up after the session as well if you want to chat some more. I'll be working at the Windows Azure booth tomorrow. I'll probably be there at various times, but I'll certainly be there 11:30 to 1:30 tomorrow if you want to swing by. Also have my email address there, and certainly feel free to get in touch with me. Any questions? None? Okay. Well, thanks very much for for attending. Appreciate you being here. Sorry for some of the technical snafus, but we still managed to pretty much get through all the content. Have some additional links here that you can just reference later for more information on workflow and Azure and that sort of thing. So with that, thanks very much. Please fill in a survey. I think the higher the scores you give, the more entries you get for a Surface tablet. I don't know. I might have the details of that wrong, but definitely fill in a survey. The feedback's very important for me. Great. Thanks very much.